Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motor Studio is mobile today in Troy, New York, for the third and deciding game of the New York Penn League Championship game between the State College Spikes and the Tri-City Valley Cats. Cardinals and Astros tonight for the title for the second consecutive year. And today's show is brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. Auto, home, life, business insurance. That's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. They've served the Valley for decades. Kevin, of course, driving another vehicle this week for Sunbury Motors after the F-150 experience last week that made you feel more manly.
Indeed. I'm sorry. I had microphone issues there for a minute. Now I'm ready.
You've been in this business how long?
You would think it was just yesterday.
Yeah. So what are you driving this week?
This week, we're featuring the Lincoln MKS. Beautiful vehicle, all-wheel drive. So not only do you have the luxury of Lincoln and the additional features like heated seats not only in the front but also in the back, but as winter is approaching, you have all-wheel drive to get you there safely in a five-star safety-rated vehicle. And I talked about some of the safety features, including adaptive cruise control, where you set the gap between you and the next car, and the cruise control will actually raise and lower your speed depending on where the car is in front of you, so you never have to worry about being in cruise control and not being able to stop quick enough when the car ahead of you slows up or hits the brakes hard themselves.
The quality of that vehicle is backed up by the incredible quality of Sunbury Motors. 4th Street Auto Mall in Sunbury. Also, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 Hummel's Wharf. And don't forget the service department, whether it's routine maintenance or something even more extensive. They do an incredible job. That's Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 Hummel's Wharf. Bob Buhner is with us again today.
Hello, Steve.
Dave Spadari from the Philadelphia Eagles is going to join us at 3:35. Then Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times Tribune, who wrote a rather thoughtful column on giving back Joe Paterno his wins. We will have Donnie on at 4:06 today on the show to talk about that. Tomorrow, Mark Silverman, who is the president of Big Ten Network, is going to join us tomorrow. We will talk with Mark. Looking forward to that very much. He has been there since the launch on day one. He's done an incredible job of taking an entity that was in the red its initial year and has now been deep-pocketed each year since. And we'll talk to Mark about that and more, especially with their opening coverage of Penn State and Rutgers' first-ever Big Ten game, which will be Saturday night at 8. We'll be on the air beginning at 6:30. Also tomorrow, Jeff Hartman from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com will talk about the Steelers, who are getting ready for their Thursday night game when they take on the Baltimore Ravens. Well, there was a speech that Bobby Kennedy made in Cape Town in 1966, and in that speech he said, "May you live in interesting times." Bob, it's great to have someone of your legal mind on because we live in interesting times.
Steve, we sure do. It's an amazing whirlwind of events that have occurred since last Friday, all involving the NCAA, the Big Ten, Penn State, assorted presidents, host and legions of lawyers, you know, obviously culminating yesterday in some announcements about the lifting of certain sanctions, the maintaining of other sanctions, the shifting around of certain sanctions. And one voice or one name was remarkably silenced, and that was the president of the NCAA. I found that very telling yesterday, that the announcement of the lifting of several sanctions against Penn State was done by the chairman of the executive committee of the NCAA, who's a university president. And they obviously, the executive committee met yesterday morning, voted on and approved the lifting of certain sanctions. So, yeah, there's a lot that's out there and obvious, but there's a lot of subtleties in the background.
I will, in fairness, to go back to July 23rd of 2012, it was the executive committee that did vote to impose the sanctions, and Mark Emmert was the one that became the front man to discuss them.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's been a lot of focus on him, but I do want to at least be fair as to how the process played out.
Although there's been a lot of, shall we say, chatter that there's a repudiation going on in a battle within the NCAA because a lot of college presidents fear that a strong leader of the NCAA could impose sanctions against their particular university in the manner in which it was imposed against Penn State. So there was, I thought that was a right. telling thing. The other thing, Steve, that was very interesting is that there is a lawsuit currently pending in the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court. It was brought by the treasurer of the Commonwealth, a guy by the name of Rob McCord, who's the chief check writer of the Commonwealth, and State Senator Corman, who represents the Center County area. And they challenged the $60 million fine being spent outside the Commonwealth at the discretion of the NCAA, and legislation was passed that indicated that Pennsylvania wanted that whole $60 million spent in within the bounds of the Commonwealth. And my old organization, the District Attorneys Association, and other victims' rights and advocates joined in that call. And the Commonwealth Court preliminarily said that the motion to dismiss by the NCAA was denied, and they scheduled it for trial and actually joined Penn State as another defendant. Friday, the NCAA, before all the announcements were made on Monday, Friday, the NCAA filed a motion with the Commonwealth Court that in essence said that the lawsuit was now moot because the NCAA had agreed that the $60 million fine would be spent within Pennsylvania. And apparently there were lots of negotiations going on between the lawyers for Senator Corman, Treasurer McCord, and the NCAA. One of the things that was apparently, Steve and Kevin, on the table was the restoring the wins to Penn State that had been taken away. And the NCAA said no to that, but they did agree. But this was done on Friday. The Mitchell announcement, as we know, and the NCAA voting was done on Monday. Kind of peculiar, I thought, the timing of all that.
Interesting. It's still on the table, and I want to address one other thing, and I did talk about this briefly, and then I want to get to Ray Rice for a second because I need to. I have a question for you. It actually deals with the district attorney.
Yeah.
And not with the Ravens or the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
The money, people have complained that Penn State's not going to get its bowl money despite being postseason eligible. Again, it is only my guess. I have not had it confirmed. But I think that the money has already been allocated over a four-year span to various charities involving children in the cities or towns across the Big Ten. And I'll be frank with you, that doesn't bother me if that's the case. So, I mean, because I don't want those organizations to be denied money that they may have been expecting. And I'll leave it at that. If fans think I'm wrong, then I understand they can call and tell me. The district, we've talked about Roger Goodell. We've talked about the Ravens with Ray Rice.
Mm-hmm.
You watch the tape. I would assume that the district attorney had access to that tape right away, that he or she could look at it. Bob, you've been in that position. Can you even possibly understand why or why not as to how they went about their business in terms of indictment?
Yeah, a couple things, Steve. Is first of all, the investigation would not be conducted by a district attorney. We have no authority to investigate anything. The investigation of the Ray Rice incident would have been done with the Atlantic City Police Department. They would have gathered the evidence, including getting the tapes from the casino in Atlantic City where the incident occurred.
But Bob?
Yes.
Bob, can I interrupt one?
Please.
But would the district attorney, though, eventually see the tape?
Oh, I absolutely. And that's what I was getting to.
Okay.
What happens is the police do all their gathering. They would then, because it's so high profile, I'm certain, go right to the DA. Here's what we have. They would view the tapes and then make decisions. In New Jersey, there is a what's known as a pretrial diversion program for domestic violence offenders. And it's very akin to what Pennsylvania does for first-time DUI offenders. We call that ARD. We do not have a similar program for domestic violence offenders in Pennsylvania, but apparently New Jersey and Atlantic County does. So they made a decision, the district attorney, to place Mr. Rice in this diversionary program, which involves therapy, being in essence on probation for a limited period of time.
But they may have been living together, but they weren't married at the time.
No, but
wouldn't it just be an assault? Would it be an assault and battery case in a public place?
No, because it was done on private property in an elevator, first of all. Second of all, and I think this is very important, it sounds like these are open and shut cases, but if you have a victim who is not willing to testify, who is not willing to go on the witness stand, you don't have a case.
And she was not, you could tell she was not willing to go.
She was not willing.
So
even though it's obvious what happened, if you don't have the victim to authenticate that, yes, this was me, I was in the elevator, this is what happened, he hit me, how did it feel, it hurt, etc. The standard things you have. If you don't have a witness, you don't have a case. I had a tragic situation which ended up in a murder-suicide a couple weeks after an incident of domestic violence because the woman, despite my literally almost getting down on my knees and begging her to testify and telling her that she needed to do the right thing and other people did as well, including family members, she refused to do it for her own personal reasons. If you don't have a witness, you don't have a case. And that's very difficult.
So the videotape is not enough of a witness where you can see for yourself what happened?
Well, it is, but you've got to have somebody to authenticate the tape. You know, you just can't play a piece of videotape. You have to have somebody to sponsor it. Yes, that was me. Here I walked into the elevator. Yes, that was Ray Rice. Yes, he hit me. This is me going down. All of those things.
Okay.
So those are tough. And that's, I think, one of the difficulties.
On a security camera, Bob, it's not like watching HD at home. I mean, in other words, I mean, we know that's Ray Rice and Janae Palmer going in because we know it's Ray Rice and Janae Palmer.
Right.
But the clarity of it is it's such where we can visually actually say, yeah, that's Ray Rice. I watched it online last night, and the only reason I know it's him and her is because I'm told it's him and her.
I had that same exact thought when I was watching it. Yeah.
And so, you know, as a prosecutor, you have to put that.
I mean, we know it
stand.
Is.
Yes. Well, because other people told us.
We know it is. We know it is. But the problem is that a defense attorney would say, "Well, okay, really, you actually know that those are the two people by looking at it, or is it because you were told?"
And the other part of it is only those two people can say, or only the
woman could say, what
happened prior to getting on the elevator? What happened that instigated? Did you threaten him, and he was responding to a threat because you said you had a gun in your pocket and you were going to shoot him? All these things. It's so difficult as a prosecutor. It is heartbreaking when these things happen because you want to prosecute and you don't have a witness to come forward to do it.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting. We're going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles coming up next. Then Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times-Tribune at 4:06 and his column today about the sanctions and Joe Paterno's wins and Tom Bradley's win. We'll talk to Donnie at 4:06. Eagles are next. Today's show being brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. auto, home, life, business insurance. If service or price means something to you, guess what? It means everything to them. It's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. We'll come back, second half hour of the show on News Radio 1070.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
When it comes to insurance, let's face it, the options and the sources keep changing. It gets confusing. Do you really know what you're getting? Better yet, do you know what you're not getting? Save time and save your mind with a simple call to the Kratzer Insurance Agency of Mount Pleasant Mills or Northumberland. For 51 years, the Kratzer Insurance Agency has been keeping the Susquehanna Valley insured and protected from whatever comes our way. If your policy is up for renewal, or you suffer the disappointment of cut-rate insurance deals on the internet or over the phone, then listen. Don't sacrifice personal service. The Kratzer Insurance Agent, your independent agent, has your best interest in mind. Of course they have competitive prices.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. Call us, stop in, or visit us online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security. The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome, great to have you with us. And as always on Tuesday, we're brought to you by our great friends at Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. Auto, home, life, business insurance. If service and price means something to you, which I believe they do, it means everything to them. It's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll get back to Penn State in just a few moments. Next half hour, Donnie Collins from Scranton is going to join us about the column he wrote this morning about the lifting of sanctions, except for the wins being restored. We'll talk to Donnie about that. But Dave Spadaro's with the Philadelphia Eagles and joins us now. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, it's great to be with you, and congratulations to all those Penn State fans who are so happy, and it's really fantastic news.
Well, thanks. Appreciate that very much. I'm sure they appreciate hearing you say that. All right, you go through week one, and you watch them play Jacksonville. They fall behind, come back. Pros and cons out of the opening game in your eyes?
Well, I mean, the con was the way the team started. It was certainly a very, very tough first half offensively. And that, you know, when you play better teams, that's got to change. You've got to play very well for 60 minutes. So, and then Nick, you know, just the hesitancy, the turnovers. I mean, very uncharacteristic of him. So you hope that that's out of the way. Then the injuries, that kind of remains to be seen where that's going completely. But last year the Eagles were able to stay healthy during the regular season, and that helped them win the division. The pros, the way the team came back, the way they stuck together, I thought the special teams and defense largely outstanding for the entire game. And then just the quick strike ability of the offense. I really reminded me of the college game on Saturday, Oregon and Michigan State, just the explosiveness with which Oregon's offense operated. And you saw the same thing with the Eagles on Sunday. So I like the start, and getting a win obviously is all that matters. There's no style points in the NFL. Jaguars came in, played a good game, physical defense. We kind of knew that was going to happen. And Eagles lead the division. The division took its lumps in week one. The Eagles, the only team in the NFC East to win a football game.
The next part is, though, there were a couple of injuries on that offensive line. The concerns there right now.
Yeah, I think there's some valid concerns. You know, Alan Barbary and Evan Mathis, those are significant injuries, and I think the Eagles still are considering all their options and, you know, clearly, reportedly working out some players and looking. They always have an emergency list, and they've also got some players in the practice squad. And, you know, they don't report back. The players don't report back to the NovaCare Complex until Wednesday, so they prepare for practice beginning Wednesday for the Monday night game. And at that time, I'm sure they'll have a full picture of where they need to go offensively up front. And, you know, combine that with Lane Johnson's suspension, and you're looking at a really thin group going on the road for a primetime game against the Colts, a very good football team, hostile environment, a defense that's going to come after you, and the Eagles have a lot of question marks up front.
And a Colts team coming off an opening loss as well. They don't want to start 0-2 either. They lost to Denver in the opener on Sunday night, 31-24. When you look at what Chip has done, Chip Kelly, in his career, whether it's New Hampshire, Oregon, his quarterbacks have averaged a touchdown pass every 13 attempts, and they've averaged an interception only every 52 attempts. You now have watched this for a little more in the season, into a second season. What is it about the system, besides the obvious talent, Dave, that makes it work and it causes those numbers to occur?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because I think it's the tempo. I think that's part of it. I think it's the feel that Chip has for what a defense is going to do, trying to stay one step ahead. Obviously, the talent does help. I think spacing out the field, not only vertically but horizontally, is tremendous. And look, I'll give you one thing that I think is really important. Identifying how a player's talents can fit into this offense. When the Eagles, for example, traded for Darren Sproles, we all said, boy, I can't wait to see him move around the formation and create all these matchups in the passing game and really kill defenses that way. And then what big play does he make on Sunday, the one that turns the game around, a 49-yard touchdown run? On 4th and 1, he was the one, Darren Sproles, not LeSean McCoy, who gets the carry. And so that's a big deal. And every player in the NFL is very talented. It's so incumbent upon the coaching staff of every team to identify which players are going to help you the most, and where, and in what situations. And I think Chip is really good at, you know, taking a Darren Sproles, insisting that he's a running back, when all of the reporters sitting there going, yeah, skeptical. And then he goes out and does a great job in the run game, in addition to being a force in the punt return game and helping out in the passing game. So all of those things combined, the offense, you know, it's great to be seen if the league has caught up to him, but week one they clearly didn't.
Dave, from 3,000 miles away, we get a perception of what he did at Oregon, whatever we watched on TV, high flying all over the place. Has there been anything in watching him now up close for the last couple of years, watching this system unfold before you, where you've seen him make adaptations to the NFL, and it surprised you that things I saw at Oregon I'm not seeing now?
Well, I wasn't as close to what I, you know, watching Oregon. You watch on a Saturday night, you notice the uniforms, you notice all the points, you notice these kids running through these four-lane highways for touchdowns. What impresses me, honestly, is every day. And it's not just what happens on the field, it's what happens on the way to game day, the program that's in place, the way the players respond to it, you know, these sports science things, and everything's aimed at recovery for the players. That you have a day of now training. They're not called practices anymore, they're called training sessions. And then you get off the field, you put some food in your body, you're getting your sleep, you're getting your rest, you're mentally alert, and then you go back out and you're great the next day. And that's really the key in the NFL, is being great for as many Sundays, or in the case of the Eagles, Mondays as well, as you can. And so it's really everything with Chip. It's his energy, it's his awareness of all the big picture items, it's his attention to detail. And then in a game, it's really, I'll tell you, I guess maybe the one thing that surprises me is that he's much more defensive-minded than a lot of people would have led you to believe when he came from Oregon, that it was simply all he cared about was the offense. But he's really entrusted Bill Davis They address the draft. Five of the seven draft picks go to the defensive side of the ball. A lot of their energies, efforts, and resources in free agency went to the defensive side of the ball. So he really has a big picture in mind. And I guess more than anything, that's kind of what's striking about his program. He really believes in the big picture. So I've just been every day. It's different around here, and it's fun to be around.
Dave, let's talk about the defense for a moment. That was going to be my next question anyway. I know my broadcast partner for Penn State football, Jack Ham, often over the years would tell me what a great defensive coordinator he thought the late Jim Johnson was, and I think everyone had universal respect for him. What does Bill Davis bring to the table now that has people excited? Because I've been hearing more and more how impressed they are in him as a coordinator.
Yeah, and I think we've only seen the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's still not a lot of – there's still some pieces that you can see needed to be added. I mean, they still need to get that pass rush going. They need to be more, I guess, elite athletically in the secondary. I think Bill's got a lot that he's kind of held back just because the pieces aren't all here. Very good scheme. Again, the ability to take a Trent Cole, who's played his entire career as a 4-3 defensive end, stand him up, and you look at his last nine games, and he's got eight sacks, and he's been really productive. And so he understands the personnel. He works within that. He got every defensive player on board from a concept standpoint and a language standpoint in the spring, so that when they got to training camp, they were already fairly advanced. And you know, they've really jumped it up a lot here. They've jumped up their performance tremendously. But I think, you know, I think we'll see more of Bill when he goes into games like Monday night, when you go against a Colts team that's got Andrew Luck and three great receivers with Hakeem Nicks and Reggie Wayne and T.Y. Hilton, a good group at tight end, running backs who can catch the football. I want to see how Bill comes out scheme-wise, what kind of tricks he kind of employs against Andrew Luck, how many defensive backs is he going to play, how does he match up against this spread offense. Smart guy, communicates well. I really believe that when the Eagles have a bit more success defensively, Bill Davis will be an NFL head coach. He has that kind of personality, that kind of pizzazz, that kind of just star power, the way he takes over a room when he comes in, and the players really respect him. And to be honest with you, I mean, when you think about where the Eagles were defensively 12 months ago, where they are now, it is just night and day.
Dave Spadaro joining us from the Philadelphia Eagles. Dave, we talked. Let's keep it on the defensive side. Pros and cons that you saw in the opener, because it's only a starting point, but pros and cons at least initially.
Well, you know, again, from a defensive standpoint, I thought they were pretty solid early on. Gave up a couple of big plays. Didn't like Kerry Williams a couple of times biting on some plays, so he's got to really tighten that up. He can't make the big play all the time, but they did a great job against the run, as expected. You know, it's tough to really gauge. Jacksonville is not a high-powered offense. In an NFL world of high-powered offenses, Jacksonville is just not really that kind of team. But they battled. They used all of their assets. They played everybody. And I guess maybe the one negative here is we want to see Marcus Smith and the number one draft pick kind of make a contribution as the season goes along, just get his level of comfort in the defense a little bit more significant. And I think that's, you know, that's part of the big picture plan here of taking this defense to a new level. Your first-round draft pick has to contribute.
Yeah, I think eventually with Blake Bortles, Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, 2 years from now, Jacksonville may have a high-powered offense, but they don't.
I agree. I think that's a team. Yeah. That's very, very close.
Now, the next part, they have Indianapolis on Monday night. You watch them against Denver. We know about Andrew Luck, and you referenced the three outstanding wideouts. How excited are you to see the Eagles' offense go up against the Colts' defense, which is not talked about often enough?
Yeah, and they don't have Robert Mathis, and they've really struggled with the pass rush.
Right.
And then we know that Peyton Manning kind of took them apart a bit, but he does that to everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see. I think there's going to be some points scored on Monday night, and it's going to be a different kind of environment for Nick and the offense. They've got to score some points. They've got to do it early. They can't have a scoreless first half and hope to hang with Andrew Luck. So I'm very interested to see. And depending on the severity of these injuries up front, how do the Eagles adjust with you know, potentially three key players, and I'm talking about Lane Johnson and Barber and also Evan Mathis out of the lineup. How do they adjust? What kind of depth do they have? What kind of adjustments do they need to make if there are new players indeed in the lineup on Monday?
In a pass-happy NFL, can you explain to everyone the luxury of LeSean McCoy?
Well, he's just such a great player, and he really danced his way to 71 yards on Sunday, made plays out of nothing, and it is a pass-happy league, but the Eagles are a run-first team, and when defenses play a little bit light in the box and have seven in the box or a safety high, they're going to run the football. That's just what they're going to do. So having LeSean McCoy, I mean, he's less than 1,000 yards away from becoming the franchise leader in career yards. He's durable. He runs with power. He's got a nose for the end zone. He catches the football very well. He gives it up blocking. I mean, I think there's none better that I've seen in the Eagles uniform, and none better in the league right now than LeSean McCoy. He is a wonderful player to watch and a wonderful kid to be around. He really loves the game of football.
Well, you're a wonderful guest to have on the show, and we appreciate the time you carved out for us very much, Dave.
Anytime, and thank you. And yeah, it should be I think it's a fun season ahead. I know Eagles fans were in agony and despair for the first half of Sunday, but you know, again, no style points in the NFL. 1-0 and a big game on Monday night, a game that really kind of tell where the Eagles are right now.
Good point. Thanks so much, Dave. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you. Have a great day.
Dave Spadaro from the Philadelphia Eagles joining us to talk about a little Eagle ball. They are off to a good start. The only team in the division to actually win its opening game. The Giants lost to Detroit last night. Cowboys were taken apart by the 49ers, and the Redskins lost to Bill O'Brien's Houston Texans. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show is brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland, Auto Home Life Business Insurance. If service and price means something to you, it means everything to them. Once again, Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. We'll continue with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Get one piece of information in the news yesterday about the sanction rollback to allow Penn State to play in a bowl game and then the scholarships. Something that Penn State has, you know, and I think it makes the 17-9 record even a little bit more remarkable over the last two plus seasons. If Penn State can get to six wins and thus qualify for a bowl game, that means they would get additional practice time leading into the bowl game, which they have missed out on the last 2 years. That additional time is invaluable for a coaching staff, and it's also invaluable for young players on the football team coming back because it gives them that extra evaluation time, especially some of the younger players that may not have been ready to make the move to get playing time at this stage of their careers, but are to the doorstep of doing it, and the door would be open to them in 2015. Suddenly you go from scout team, and in those practice sessions, you now get elevated to a spot where you get really looked at again in terms of a 2015 look before you then obviously go to spring practice. Those extra practice sessions, everybody else, you know, with winning records, they've had. And now if Penn State can qualify for a bowl game, those extra practice sessions will be invaluable for the players in their growth, but also invaluable for the coaching staff in their evaluation of the players. So that's a thing that is lost in this that has to be added to the mix.
Steve, I have a question about recruiting, but not a specific recruit question. Do you believe that the Franklin coaching staff has some names in their back pocket that they have not announced commitments, or the high school seniors have not announced coming to Penn State because they were uncertain about how many additional scholarships, if any, they would have. But now that we know that has changed dramatically with the lifting of the scholarship sanction, we'll be hearing about more recruits for the class of 2015.
Well, Bob, that's an interesting question. You know what? I want to remind everyone that when the rollback occurred last year, Penn State was allowed to go from 65 to 75 this year, and right now they have 72. But one of them is Anthony Stanko, by the way. So they actually have 71. And it was also put in that Penn State in the original rollback could go to 80 next year, but James Franklin and his staff, it was originally Bill O'Brien, but James Franklin and staff actually would be allowed to recruit 25 players for February. So that already was in place that they could get to 25. So that, I think they've been operating under the idea that they could get 25, and then whatever they needed to do to make it work to get to 80, they would make it work. So I think, you know, they already had it in place. They could get 25 anyway. Now the difference is they're allowed to go beyond 80 and get to 85. So I think that part actually is not going to require is not going to bring with it any adjustment by them, because they were already allowed the maximum they could go after to begin with.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was some players.
Right, in terms of a given year. So I think they've been recruiting with the idea they would have the full complement of 25 to go after.
Well, there's...
Because before when it was 15,
yeah.
Bob,
oh.
You're absolutely right. There were guys they had to look at and say, geez, no, I'm sorry. You can't. Because there were kids that wanted to come here that couldn't, and Penn State couldn't go beyond. But when they made the move from 75 for this year, next year was supposed to be 80.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also going to be allowed to sign 25. So that actually, that number never did change. Now they can get the 25 and they can get it up to 82, 83, somewhere in there, probably in that range. I doubt they can get it to 85, unless, of course, obviously, well-deserving, hard-working walk-ons make up a couple of those.
And that's always a good possibility.
Brian Kizer, right.